Okay, Kyle, so as you've noticed, we've been calling our fans Hoff fans.
Love it.
But there's been a debate rumbling in the Hoff fan universe. Should
Ooh.
Hoff fans be Dustin Hoffman fans or Philip Seymour Hoffman fans? You know where the vote of this podcast goes.
Yes, of course.
But just as a little challenge to you, I'm going to name you some movie characters, and you're going to tell me whether that's a Phil Hoffman character or a Dustin Hoffman character.
Oh, come on. This is
You ready
gonna
for
yeah.
this?
It's like
Should be easy for
it's
you.
like
Should be
pitching to a
child's
healthy
play.
Lou Gehrig.
Okay, Lancaster Dodd.
Philip.
Good. Freddie Miles.
Freddie Miles, Phil.
Can you name the film?
Ooh.
The
Is it like
Talented Mr. Ripley.
talent?
But that's not the contest, so
Okay,
you're not being counted
yeah.
against it. Ben Braddock.
Dustin.
Yes, from The
From The
Graduate.
Graduate, yeah.
Art Howe.
Art Howe. That's Philip Seymour Hoffman. Art Howe.
Moneyball.
Yeah, Moneyball, yeah. Duh. I was like, that's a real person. What was
Raymond
that?
Babbitt.
Raymond Babbitt. Dustin.
Yes, Rain Man.
Yeah.
Bernie Faulkner.
Oh, duh. I was just like, Dustin.
Gus, I might be pronouncing this wrong, but you got it already.
Yeah,
Gus
it's for
Afrikados.
yeah, exactly. It's Philip from
Charlie Wilson's War.
Charlie Wilson's War.
Carl Bernstein.
Carl Bernstein. Dustin?
Yes, from All the President's Men.
Ah,
Real guy,
yeah.
real journalist. Dorothy Michaels.
Dorothy Michaels?
Yes.
Oh, duh. Okay, Dustin from
Tootsie.
Tootsie, yeah.
And last but not least, Sandy Lyle.
Oh, come on. Phil from Long Came Polly.
Yep, you pass, so you can officially declare who Hoff fans are.
Hoff fans are clearly for Philip Seymour Hoffman because I'm not trying to take anything away from the great Dustin Hoffman, but Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, a lot more memorable characters.
Wow, challenge issued.
Yeah.
You guys on the Dustin Hoffman podcast that we're not sure exists or not. Challenge issued. Feel free to challenge back.
My favorite Dustin Hoffman role, Hook.
I know, I couldn't say Captain Hook here. I mean, that's too
Yeah.
obvious.
Could have said James Hook.
Come on.
Iggy Pop! Hey, man! Let it ride! I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun,
Tommy, that's a cave thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Spanish!
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hey, Hoff fans, and welcome to this week's edition of the PS I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies. This week we get our first collaboration between Philip Seymour Hoffman and Kyle, one of your favorites, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Man, this is definitely like one of the ones I was really looking forward to, because as you just said, this begins it all. Like, some of his greatest performances come through the collaboration with P.T. Anderson.
And it's not that I'm not a P.T. Anderson guy, because I really like P.T. Anderson too, but you're a P.T. Anderson guy.
Yeah,
Like a loyalist. He's one of your inspirations.
Oh, definitely. Like, I saw Boogie Nights, not like, I mean, so it came out in 97, but I saw Boogie Nights probably in 2004. And I just like fell in love with it. It just has every. I mean, this episode isn't about Boogie Nights.
Yes. Today's episode, FYI, is about Heartache,
Heart Eight,
a film that was before Boogie Nights.
Yes, but like Boogie Nights drew me in, and then Heart Eight was hard to find. Like
at that
time,
time,
online shopping wasn't, you know, big or whatever. But now, you know, like you can find it and purchase
Maybe
it
not big for
online.
you, but big for those into AOL keywords and such.
But now you can find it on Amazon, on YouTube, on iTunes, and so it's such a good film.
How many I always forget this. How many films do they end up doing together?
They've got Heart Eight, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, and then Cut to Punch Drunk Love, and then Cut to The Master.
The Master.
So I just named them. Was that five?
I wasn't counting
I was doing
either.
Fingers,
yeah.
But
but you kept throwing
yeah.
up the same fingers.
Heart
kind
Eight,
of.
Heart Eight, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Punch Drunk Love, The Master. Yeah, five.
Five. Okay, that's what I thought. Five.
So yeah, five. Yeah, five films.
Yeah, I mean, and it's a legendary collaboration, obviously, with the roles kind of expanding.
Oh, it's up there with those direct. I mean, P.T. Anderson, admittedly so. Like, Scorsese is one of his biggest influences. So it's up there with his collaborations with, like, De Niro and Pesci and DiCaprio, so, and Keitel.
So this film, Hard Eight, was originally a short film.
Yeah.
Had you ever seen the short film?
I then saw the short, again, like, later on, like, when it was
yeah,
able,
I hadn't.
Like, you know, because it originally showed at Sundance back in, like, 92 or 93,
yeah,
94, early 90s. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I still have never been to Sundance. Yeah, that's called Cigarettes and Coffee, not to be confused later on with the film Coffee and Cigarettes by Jim Jarmusch. That's always
oh,
a big, that's always a big confusion.
Yeah, so obviously the title was changed here. But before we get into it some more, why don't you tell our audience what Hard Eight is about?
Hard Eight is about Sidney, played by Phil Baker Hall, a veteran of the casino scene, and he finds John, played by John C. Reilly, a young man down on his luck, and decides to take him under his wing. They become partners in earning money from casinos and build a strong relationship, but John's lack of common sense goes from problematic to dangerous when he falls in love with Clementine, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, and she's a local cocktail waitress who doesn't exactly shy away from turning down tricks for some extra cash.
No, she does not. So this is one of those rare films that's... It's 83% on Rotten Tomatoes,
mm-hmm.
both by critics and
it's
by
a tie.
The audience.
Like,
yeah,
it's a,
tie.
I'm sorry, or it's the, yeah, it's the same number.
This that's, consensus between audience
wow.
and critics.
Okay, that's pretty, that's good.
Would you rank it higher as a P.T. Anderson fan? Obviously, he gets stronger and...
No, that, I mean, that's like, that's very fair score.
It's favorable, I mean.
Yeah, it, no, it's a real, I'm surprised.
Especially for a first feature.
But yeah, oh yeah, but I'm surprised that, so it's critics and then the other one's just called...
Audience.
Oh, just
yeah,
audience,
just
okay.
Like, yeah, people's opinion.
Like, I always want to say consumer. But the audience, I'm surprised by 83 by audience more than, like, I get critics, like, have the, you know, like...
I think a lot of that comes from his later following and then later understanding.
Yeah, and then
work.
Just, like, the cult following
exactly,
of, like, people
exactly.
reviewing. Yeah, that makes sense. It's a little. It, some of the story is a little bit weak, but mind you, I mean, so there's three versions of this film.
Yeah, yeah. Tell us about that. Oh, first of all, I mean, obviously you've seen it. I just want to be clear. I've seen this film, but I saw it like a while ago.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't really paying attention the first time I saw it, so
yeah.
I consider this my first like conscious viewing of the film.
Gotcha.
And
yeah,
like,
I've probably seen this film like, the, including watching it for this episode. Five times.
Like you said, there's three versions. So what version... Did we watch the same version?
Yes, we watched the same. But there's only one version out there for like everyone to see.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that is the final P.T. Anderson-funded cut. So first, there was a cut... All right, so he had a really big problem with the production company. It was Reisner Productions.
Like Paul Reisner?
No, it's like R-Y-S-N-E-R.
Oh, man. We had Helen Hunt last week. I was hoping we'd get like a Mad,
a little
about,
mad
you,
about You
Paul Reisner this week, but no.
We get Hank Azaria later on in
oh, yeah,
Along
wow.
with Polly. Too bad. Yeah, so three versions had a really big problem with the production company. They just like looked at this and went, this is too artsy. He had like a, he's P.T. Anderson. Later on we find out this guy makes, you know, like longer films.
Yes.
And so this, he had like a 2.5 hour cut or something like that. Maybe even like a 3 hour, but I think it was like around 2.5 hours. And they were like, no, 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 no. And at first they just like took it all and started making like their complete own cut, like different music, like everything like that. But he was able to get that version and he sent it to Cannes Film Festival. It was really received well there, so I think they kind of warmed up to letting him do his own thing, but they're like, you have to do something. So he trimmed it down to the, I think it was like an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah, it wasn't long.
So he trimmed it down to that, and then the biggest thing, so this is the, like, he did it, and so every cut that is in it, like, you know, he decided, but the one thing they wouldn't move on was he wanted to name this movie Sidney after the title character, but they were like, oh, people will just think it's a film about, like, Australia or something, and so they wanted Hard Eight.
I kind of like that title, though.
I like it, too, because it's not like the film is dependent, like, on the role of the Hard Eight, but it's in, hey... It's in the scene with our main man.
I was going to say, it's in my favorite scene of the film.
So it kind of honors Philip Seymour Hoffman in a way. So I actually like it.
What genre would you say this film is?
It's drama, but there's like a crime, you know.
Because it listens noir as like feel to noir, it. And I get that feel.
Yeah,
I get that feel. It has kind of that. It's not my favorite genre, to be honest with you.
Mm.
But it's still, it's cool. It's cool when we see it, right?
Yeah, I mean, all of his films, P.T. Anderson, he makes, you know, they're about like dysfunctional, desperate people. So that's like an overlaying like theme in all of his films.
Okay, so the star of this film, not Philip Seymour Hoffman, unfortunately,
but John C. Reilly,
John C. Reilly, yes.
Yeah. Oh, and Philip Baker Hall.
Yeah. I would say Philip Baker Hall is like the main star.
Yeah, especially because
what is with the triple
movie.
Names? I guess C is not a middle name.
That is, definitely. There's a lot of like triple names.
I guess this. Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, we got Paul Thomas Anderson, Philip Baker Hall, John C. Reilly, Samuel L. Jackson. Like,
true.
Awesome.
So, where do you know Philip Baker Hall from besides this film?
I mean, his other role, like, definitely Boogie Nights, that was, like, another one
Boogie
I saw
Nights,
him
of
in.
Course. I wrote down, like, where do I know this guy from? Mm-hmm. One of them was Seinfeld. He famously played, like, this library cop in Terrytown for the book. He was in Rush Hour. I think he's, like, one of the head detectives.
Oh, yeah.
Zodiac, one of your favorite films.
Yes.
And another favorite film of yours, and I've been dying to work this film into the podcast. I haven't seen it. Though, being more of a WWE fan than you, I should have seen this film. And it's Bending the Rules with Edge and Jamie Kennedy.
Yep.
One of your guilty pleasure favorites. Or maybe you're not guilty about it at all. I don't know.
No, I love that movie.
Is he in the film? Like, do you remember that?
It's like
it was listed on his IMDb.
Yeah, he's just like an older, like, I think cop.
He plays cops a lot. He's not a cop here, but he plays cops
a lot. No, but like cop, detective, like dick.
He has that authority figure thing about him, but again, like you said, not like straight-laced authority figure.
Mm-hmm. P.T. Anderson really noticed him in this movie where he played Nixon, actually. It's called Secret Honor, so I need to see that still, because...
I haven't seen that one. You know I like the political films.
Yeah, any movie that P.T. Anderson loves, I'm totally, you know, I'll go see that.
That's cool. And to be clear, he's in the original short, correct?
Yeah.
It's amazing how P.T. Anderson, like, I guess out of film school, right? Like, was able to get a known actor in a short film.
Yeah, he was in, like, NYU for, like, not long at all and dropped out and then decided to take, like, that money and make the short film.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, one of the more famous NYU dropouts.
Yeah, what are some others?
No, I mean, I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't going to do, like, a list here, but... It's funny you always hear about these college dropouts who make it. Not advocating that you drop out of school, guys.
No, stay in school.
But sometimes, you know,
sometimes it works out. Yeah, I guess if you get
it's not—it's not a hard and fast rule.
If you got that genius level,
I guess so.
But I mean, this is awesome. Again, so we said this on the Scent of a Woman episode, but that was the movie that P.T. Anderson saw that he went like, I need to work with this actor who is Philip Seymour Hoffman. And so cut to like the first time he gets his first feature, he finds him. And the day they met was the day that he shot that scene.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. And I love, he just had this like great quote. He's like, I wrote with Phil in mind, just a loudmouth, obnoxious asshole.
we'll definitely dissect that scene.
Yes.
You mentioned John C. Reilly's in this film.
Yeah, who he collaborated with two more times. Yeah.
He's great. I'm a big John C. Reilly guy.
Yeah.
I know you are, too.
Yeah.
Even going to, like, Dewey Cox and stuff.
Well, he's one of those actors that really, he finds that great balance between drama and comedy.
Yeah, I really like him as Cal Naughton Jr. Talladega Nights. But even, look, like, he's in Scorsese films. He's in...
Yeah.
This is like a... I'm a big John C. Reilly guy.
You love Perfect Storm, right?
Perfect Storm, yes. The Big Dumb Ducks.
That actually has like a really good cast.
Yeah, it does.
It's got John Hawks in it.
It was a great film. Okay, hear me out. It was a great film for that time period.
Yeah.
That's a cool like film you watch on like pay-per-view or rent at Blockbuster. So while the film is short for P.T. Anderson standards, you know, an hour 40 or something like that, it's kind of brief in terms of the story, right? Besides for that beginning flashback, how many days does this take place?
Well, yeah, so then it says cut to 2 years later, then it takes place over, I think, 2-3 days?
Yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. So this flashback we're returning to is actually the opening of the movie.
Yes.
It's kind of important. They open in this coffee shop.
Yeah, Jack's Coffee Shop.
Jack's Coffee Shop. And Philip Baker Hall as Sidney walks by John C. Reilly, and he invites him in for breakfast.
Yeah, I love it. It's just like this great shot that we come up, and it's totally like John C. Reilly is like squatted, like sitting by the entranceway of this diner, and we just hear Philip Baker Hall's voice, and he invites John C. Reilly in for, you know, coffee and a cigarette.
Yeah, so, which again was
nice
the original
little
title.
Homage to the short film. Pretty much, he's just. I don't know if he gives these, like, little lessons to him, you know, like, just his, like, advice. He finds out that John C. Reilly needs $6,000 to bury his mom.
And John C. Reilly's character is named John, so that's easy.
Yeah. It's one of those. That should be a category sometime, like, name the top movie characters that share the same name as their actors. I love this scene because, again, so we've got another big director, and actually, rest in peace, he just passed, Jonathan Demme. And he does, and Jonathan Demme was really known for, like, his close-ups. He just captures these beautiful, you know, like...
Opposite Woody Allen.
Yeah, exactly. This scene, it just, because it just makes you, I mean, number one, they're just interesting people to look at, especially John C. Reilly. He has, like, I don't know. I mean, the man doesn't age, actually. He looks...
No, he's got, like, this goofy...
Cro-Magnon man look to him.
Go that far, but just, like, goofy and funny and insecure.
And he's got that voice.
He always looks insecure.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, it just pulls you... I mean, it just tells you a lot. It just shows you these characters. It shows you their vulnerability and, like, what they want to do, and what Philip Baker Hall, or what Sidney really wants to do, is help John, but he's only going to give him, like, you know.
Yeah, we don't really know why.
Yeah.
But anyway, he, like you said, he gives him, like, a little seed money. I like, there's one line that I wrote down that I wanted to discuss. John C. Reilly says, "I know three types of karate."
I wrote down the same line, yeah.
Jiu-jitsu, Aikido, and regular karate.
Karate.
Oh, and then he does that classic film bit, and I know it's tired, and I know it's old, but I love it every time. One, jiu-jitsu, two, Aikido, and C, regular karate.
I don't know if I caught that.
Yeah, you know, like, we see that even Home Alone, like, Buzz does it, but I'm sorry, it probably goes back to the Marx Brothers or something.
Yeah, there's some, like, Three Stooges, Marx Brothers kind of thing.
So they drive out to Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Did you really understand this, like, what he was... I know he, like, he gives him $50, and he's teaching him, like, a kind of a casino scam to get more money.
Yeah.
I didn't really understand how it worked. Did you?
With
the rate card and...
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't gamble enough. I don't know enough about games, but I guess it's not even about that. It's just this whole thing that I think they would pick up on, like, a lot more now just because of computer systems.
Even still, like, with this movie, yeah, I'm sure some dumbass tried this.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's the whole thing. So, P.T. Anderson, this is, like, based off a little bit of, like, he used to go out to Reno, and he did this.
Oh, really? And
yeah.
It worked?
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so, like, he took that, like, you know, real-life experience.
Well, if you haven't noticed, guys, we're definitely leaning on Kyle in this podcast a lot, being a P.T. Anderson fan.
Yeah, just, you know.
That's
I knew some
cool
stuff, but I also did, I mean, I did my homework, and but I just find everything he does, like, fascinating.
So he basically turns $50 into what becomes...
Ends up being, like, $2,000 on the card at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's partially... It's the way to gaining money to bury his mother, and then later... establishing himself somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, but also I want to say along the, before even this stuff, on the drive, he just has, it's just a classic, great, like, quick little scene that P.T. Anderson does in a lot of movies, and John tells this story of, like, why he doesn't like matches.
Oh, yeah,
and it's just that really, and it's John C. Reilly does, he just has, like, impeccable comedic timing.
So you like this overall opening with the drive and,
yeah,
and
just,
the matches thing. And
I think so far this is, like, extremely strong writing and character building.
Quick question, and I wrote this in my notes. What is any aspect of the short film in this film? Or just...
Besides the fact that, like, it opens in the diner and they're having, and he wants to offer him coffee and cigarettes. Like, not really.
Okay. But it's Sidney is Sidney in both.
Sidney, no? He never gets a name in.
But we're assuming he's the same character, or is it just, like, completely, like, taking the story in a different.
It's a very similar character.
Okay.
It might not be the same, like,
story
would have happened, but
it's
an extremely similar character, yeah.
So basically, the rest of the movie, like you said, takes place over a couple days. We get a flash forward to 2 years later.
Yeah, exactly. Like, pretty much Sidney explains to him that, you know, he gets that comp to a room, and he's just like, you can't win, like, $6,000 like that. It's you know, it's almost like this is, like, a job of how to make some money at, like, a casino. But yeah, like you said, like, cut to 2 years later, and they're in Reno, which I have only driven through. Have you been to Reno?
No, I have not been to Reno. Reno 911, I've seen.
Yeah.
But so, that's my exposure to Reno. Right off the bat, we're kind of introduced to our two other, I guess we can call them leads or primary characters.
Yeah.
Which, Sydney's playing Keno, one of my favorite games. I know I'm corny. And we're introduced to Gwyneth Paltrow's character, Clementine. And I love how she calls him Captain.
Yeah,
that's really awesome.
And it's like nothing, like, he's just like, why do you call me Captain? Like, you look like a captain, you feel like a captain, and like the way John follows you around.
And I get it. We also meet, well, we see John again.
Yes.
And then we meet, I guess his partner, Sam Jackson.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Well, Jimmy, yes. Yeah. And Jimmy remembers Sid from Vegas. I just love that line.
And come on, this is like an early Samuel Jackson role, and he's awesome.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like an early role. It just feels like a vintage Samuel Jackson role, like in his prime, which, again, might be early. I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, so this is post Pulp Fiction.
But it's got a Pulp Fiction vibe.
Sam Jackson gives, like, great exposition, but he gives, like, this is, like, a great little, like, story. I mean, again, P.T. Anderson, this is called, like, he falls into it. They're called the video store generation, which, come on, that's, like, a really cool...
Yeah, that is cool.
So that's, like, Kevin Smith, Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez. I love that, video store
P.T.
generation.
P.T. Anderson. So, how would you describe Samuel Jackson's character? We don't really know much about him yet.
No, but he's just a pretty high opinion of himself, got a loud mouth, something that Sidney clearly doesn't like. Like,
no.
We learned about Sidney right away. He's an old-timer, he's got these rules, he is a gentleman, and Samuel Jackson is just pretty much, like, the opposite of what Sidney is.
Yeah, and we definitely see that later. Night goes on, and Sid bumps into Clementine.
Mm-hmm.
Hooking, I guess.
Yeah, so he's outside having a cigarette. He sees Clementine, like, leaving a room, and pretty much he offers to get her a coffee, cigarette, but then I was like, ooh, he's even more, like, warming to her than John, because he also, there's a pie on the table. I took note of that.
Nice. You're always noticing your food on the table. That's right.
Yes. He tells her the story of meeting John. And we also learn that Sidney doesn't talk to his kids. So right away, we kind of see him becoming... He's already a father figure to John, and he's already bringing in... Clementine makes the comment of, like, that his daughter's around, like, the same age. So almost like John and Clementine are now his, like, adoptive kids.
So I didn't, like, remember this part.
Mm-hmm.
And it was getting creepy for me. It was, like, resolved, okay? Because he's kind of acting like a father figure.
Yeah.
But then it looks like he's, like, buying her services, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. He, like, I mean, he brings her back to, you know, the suite or whatever. And so there's also a very important thing that the movie begins, and then also this music plays again. And it's this just, like, instrumental music by writer... composer John Bryan, and he also uses this music in Boogie Nights, and it's got this very like chilling notes to it. It's like uses like bells and stuff like that, and it just makes you always think like something really bad is gonna happen.
Yeah.
And so, like you were saying, like you're like, oh my god, is Sidney actually like, are we gonna learn like he is like a flawed person? Like, is he...
Yeah,
like,
I was like, oh, no, don't do it, don't do it.
And no, like, I mean, she says, like, Captain, do you want to fuck me? And I'm like, ugh! But no, Captain or Sidney stays... Literally, he wants to help Clementine.
Yeah, he wants to help her. And it's related to his wanting to help John as well.
He's totally, like, setting John up because he leaves her in, like, John's room and says, like, oh, John can stay on the couch.
I want to step back for a moment and talk about Gwyneth Paltrow.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she's one of the more hated actors now.
Yeah.
I think it's more like her personal life and stuff.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, she's one of those actors. I mean, so she won like an Oscar like right around this time for
Shakespeare in Love,
right?
I was like, why did that win over Private Ryan kind of thing? And like,
yeah.
People actually loved that movie then. And it's like, And honestly, like, it does get shit on a little too much. Like, it's a pretty good romantic comedy.
Mm-hmm.
If not, like, a great romantic comedy. But Best Picture, again,
yeah,
over Saving Private Ryan.
Yeah.
But her, I mean, she was kind of in... This is, like, her prime here. And she'll later collaborate with Philip Seymour Hoffman a little bit more directly in Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes.
They don't share a scene in this film, no. But... I mean, I guess it's cool. Like, they're both kind of having a moment. Her more than him, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, her career started out with, like, much more of a bang than his.
Yeah, for sure. His is, like, a slow build.
Yeah, his goes from, like, a simmer to, like, a, you know, boil. Hers kind of is just, like, a wave file.
How do you think she did in this film?
I loved her in this film. She plays... I mean, like, I didn't love her character. She definitely falls into, like, that she's the one that, like, screws things up. And it's like, what are you doing this for? Like, why are you... I mean, John C. Reilly, like I said in the description of this movie, he is not the brightest guy and goes down, like, the wrong path, and he should be his own man and be like, no, that's not a good idea. But she definitely just makes horrible decisions when she already has someone like Sydney that's, like, looking after her.
Yeah, I again, it's like I said, I think she gets shit on, but there are certain roles that she does really well in, and I think she kind of does, I don't want to say stand out, but she does pretty well with this role.
And it's a compelling role of just, like, this local cocktail waitress, and we see how, like, you know, Jimmy, Sam Jackson's character is, you know, rude, and, like, when she's walking away, he, you know, says... something along the lines of, like, she's got a great pussy, you know. I mean, not right, but those words always sound amazing coming out of Sam Jackson's mouth.
Better than coming out of your mouth, I'll tell you that much.
Yes.
But she made me feel for her. There are plenty of people who have played prostitutes in films, but I felt for her. And it wasn't just in, like, the Julia Roberts kind of feel for her.
Yeah, well, no, that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
this seems realistic.
Yeah, realistically, I felt for her.
So, what, after this, like, it's a very, I mean, well, it is one of the, shorter P.T. Anderson movies, but just in general, it has, like, a really good pace to it, because then after that, we find John in the room with Clementine in the morning, and they're just talking, and Sydney walks in, and he's kind of playing Cupid, and he wants John to take her out and take her to the mall and take her shopping.
Yeah, he says to the mall, I love it. And then,
We get to our main man.
Yeah, 40 minutes in. Believe it or not, we're 40 minutes into this film, and...
What an amazing scene it is. So, again...
Okay, Kyle, set it up for us here.
So, yeah, it's... He wrote this role specifically for Philip Seymour Hoffman. He had... I'm sure after Son of a Woman, he saw him in a few other roles, but that was something that he saw it and inspired him as far as an actor.
Isn't it so awesome to be able to be, like, a young filmmaker and be like, I want to work with that guy?
Yeah.
And just get him.
And he, yeah.
Awesome.
That was, like, the day they shot this scene. That's the day, like, he met him. I love it because, so we just covered Twister last week. He totally has the same, like, Twister hair because, well, this, like, I mean, we decided to have this episode after Twister.
Yeah, we could have done it before.
Because it was released in theaters after Twister. But
Wide
release. But it was in, like, I think some smaller art house, and then was in festivals.
Festivals, and it might have been, like, one of those releases in just, like, New York and L.A.
Yeah.
But the wide release, again, and it wasn't an incredibly wide release here.
Yeah.
But the wide release was after Twister.
It was February of 97 versus, you know, technically in, like, 96 when Twister came out. That was just
So this is around the time that at least the first people are starting to really recognize.
So he still, like, had the dusty kind of look. Because he does play, like, a good, like, Midwestern kind of guy in this role. But you know what? How about we play it and we talk about it?
Yeah, it might be a long one, guys, but trust me, it's worth it.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Come on, old time. You gonna join us here, my friend? Come on. I don't wait for old people. I don't wait for old people. All right, here we go. Let's see another step.
Here we go. 8 easy 8. We're out on a point of 8. Better back hard.
Okay, I'm going to light a cigarette now, old timer. See, the thing is, I like you. And I'm going to light a cigarette. And I'm going to let you have this time to place your bet before I finish lighting this cigarette. And then when I finish lighting, I'm just going to roll and fuck you. You're laughing at that? I just said fuck you to the man. Jesus Christ. The way you look, I think you know what I'm saying, old timer. I think you do. Jesus Christ, why don't you have some fun? Fun. All right, shaka-laka-doo, shaka-laka-dooby-dooby-doo, shaka-laka-doo. You got a little bit more there. Coming in there, baby. Shaka-laka-doo, baby. I'm almost lighting it, baby. I'm gonna light the cigarette, old timer. What are you gonna do?
$2,000 heart aid.
$2,000 heart aid's a bet.
The fuck? Oh, man, you play that game, don't you? Oh, shit.
You're big time. You are big time. Oh, card eight. Oh, okay, here we go. All right, here we go. All right. This is for you, big time.
All right, I'm not even looking.
Here we go.
Hey, six. Hard six.
Hard six? That's a hard six, old timer. That's not bad for me. That's not bad for me, is it, sister? It is, Sister Sledge. There we go. It's me and you. You know what I'm saying? For fucking 100.
Hard eight.
100. Me and you, big time. Me and you. You can buy yourself another suit with this roll. 44. Fucking 44, big time. 2,000.
2,000, 100, 2,000, 2,000, 100, 100, 2,000, 44! 8,
easy, easy
8. 5 and a 3,
it's a front line winner.
Damn.
Fuck!
Fuck!
That's
good. Good. Oh, shit! I'm sorry, big time. Hey, big time, I'll buy you a drink.
God, I love that. So, to be clear, this is his only scene in the film?
Yeah, you know what? Like, I mean, well, I just want to say, since this is clearly, like, I mean, we really don't hear, like, Philip Baker Hall, like, talk in this scene, but it's clearly, I just love it. They're both on separate sides of... I don't play... Did you play craps?
I've dabbled.
I don't really know
Of a craps. I've watched many friends lose a lot of money.
Really? Yes. Yeah. I'm a blackjack. I love that they say don't play blackjack. I count cards. I always play blackjack. And
you know, I'm a sports gambling kind of guy.
Yeah.
Not here when I'm in Vegas.
I love it. They're standing on opposite sides of the table, and come on, like he's just taunting him this whole time, but it's like in fun, and I just love how even like, so he's playing this character, but this character is almost playing this character because at the end he breaks down.
Yeah, yeah.
And
it's just great. I mean, you could isolate so many lines here. I mean, we even use one of the lines in our intro.
Come on, why don't you have some fun?
Oh, it's great. So we've reviewed a lot of films that where he's only in one scene or he's in one of two scenes, mm-hmm. and it's really disappointed us. This doesn't disappoint me because, for lack of a better word, it's just awesome to me.
I wish we got more of this character.
Oh, of course, but it's not as bad as When a Man Loves a Woman and we see him for two lines. Or
yeah, I'm very curious because Philip Baker Hall said that Philip Seymour Hoffman mostly improvised all of his scenes.
Scenes
ending with an S.
Yes. Oh, that's interesting.
I'm curious if in this long version that played at Cannes, we could go into that whole debate, whatever you call that festival, but...
The one in France.
And
France, tomato, tomato.
But, yeah, like, I'm very curious if he just happened to have another scene, because I read, like, there was an alternate ending for this movie, and there was a character that we haven't met yet in the film, but he is revisited. So I'm just like this one scene with him. While it is a tremendous scene.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's one scene, but I'm satisfied. Whereas in other films we've seen so far, he's had like one or two lines, and it's just like,
yeah,
like,
I mean,
like When a Man Loves a Woman, like for example.
Yeah, or his first role of Triple Bogey.
Triple Bogey, it's one scene, and I know he's the focus.
Yeah.
But it's not the same as this. Like, he's the focus in
this. No, he is taking all of his craft.
Yeah, it's a visual
everything
scene.
He's learned.
It's an
so
audio
far
scene.
As an actor.
It's a beautiful scene, and guys, you should definitely, if you don't watch the full film, which please do, but if you don't watch the full film, just check out the scene on YouTube.
Yeah, most of the time, well, no, actually, you just listen to a very clean audio recording, because I grab clips from YouTube and put them in, but unfortunately for movies like The Yearling and even When a Man Loves a Woman,
I have to
record via just like my computer speakers or something, or inboard computer microphones. But this is a movie that like you can easily watch, and you can easily watch this
I rented
scene.
It on Amazon. Do you own this movie?
I do, on DVD, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, this is an easy one to get.
I don't think they put it on Blu-ray yet. Not all P.T. Anderson's films.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Regardless, you just YouTube it, because, again, it's so visual. Just the dice hitting the table and stuff like that. Even the way he's dressed.
Yeah.
I'm kind of obsessed with his wardrobe in these films.
Well, you've said prior that he's...
Yeah.
He had a big part in his, like, wardrobe decisions, right?
Yeah, I've heard this before, that he's, especially in P.T. Anderson films, that he was allowed to choose what to wear. I don't know, because like you said, he met him on the first day here. But he's in that, like, button-up shirt, but under it, it's like that tacky... It's like a tacky graphic t-shirt with lightning.
It kind of looks like when I went to Vegas with you, like, I think, like, three of us ended up getting these, like the old strip Vegas. What is that called?
Oh, yeah, Downtown Vegas.
Yeah, Downtown Vegas, like, with the cowboy and everything. But then there's, like, lightning in it. And there's definitely just, like, lightning on the shirt. So I'm curious. I mean, I'm sure they still made those t-shirts back then.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, those are timeless. And not in a good way.
No.
No, those are, like, the tacky. He's wearing, like, a tacky tourist
shirt. I bought it
because it
was $5.
Yeah, of course. Tacky tourist shirt, but he's got his hair slicked back.
Like,
yeah, like
I said, the dusty hair, you know.
He looks like a grimy, just...
Yeah, he just looks like a guy that, like, has probably, like, a shit job, and he just doesn't have much as... Probably doesn't have, like, a woman in his life, and it's just... I just don't, like, nothing against... I hope we have fans everywhere, and maybe in Reno, too, or whatever. There's Hoff fans in Reno. But Reno just never to me seemed like a place that I really wanted to go to.
I don't know. I've heard nice things.
all right. But just definitely like this, it just doesn't, I don't know. As far as gambling, I just don't think too many great things probably happen in general. And
this is a PSA, Kyle.
This is
don't gamble from
this
Kyle.
Is a PSH. PSA.
That was hard to do, but
I mean, he just I mean, this is a man that throughout his career he's had some memorable lines, and like you said, we have one in our, you know, intro to the podcast from this movie. But I mean, I just love it. Just starts out with, I don't wait for old people.
Yeah.
I don't wait for old people. Like I mean, I love it all. Like, I'm going to light the cigarette. I'm going to light the cigarette. And
it's so fun.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's
you can buy
so
a new
fun.
Suit. Like, he just, everything about this character. And I love it. And the character doesn't even have a name.
No. What is his name in the, what is he listed in IMDb as?
Craps player.
Craps player.
One of his greater roles.
Craps player. I should have quizzed you on that earlier, but it was too obvious. It's funny. I mean, it's witty. It's interesting. Do I want to know this guy? No, but I feel like I know this guy.
No.
Maybe not personally. I've seen this
guy. So before I said, like, Samuel Jackson is, like, the opposite, the antithesis of the opposite of Sydney, this character might be. Too, like, in a different realm. He's definitely not. He's harmless.
No, because Sydney's smooth. Sydney has all the answers. Sydney is.
Yeah.
The way he talks, he only speaks when he needs to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Philip Seymour Hoffman, craps player, I guess I'll call him.
Yeah.
Is the opposite.
Yeah.
He just says too much.
Well, again, and he goes from he's playing this character that is playing a character, and you see like him at the end of that scene just get like. You know, when he rolls a soft 8 instead of the hard 8. So again,
easy 8, right?
Yeah, easy 8. Yeah, and I love it. He just keeps 44, 44. And like, I'm like 44, and he's holding the 4 and the 4 or whatever. But I just love that he gets all like quiet after that. And he's like, let me buy you a drink. You know, he's
defeated, but.
Defeated, but. I mean, I don't know. You guys could be listening to us and be like, wow, these guys are really reading into this. No, like, this is a definitive role to me
okay, if you're listening to us and you're saying, wow, these guys are really, you know, overanalyzing this, why are you listening to a Philip Seymour Hoffman podcast?
Very fair.
We are dissecting his one scene in the film. Cut us some slack. We enjoyed it.
I watched the scene over and over again.
Yeah, we're it's fun. It's fun. It's awesome. I love this scene. I do.
Because it's just someone, he always plays real characters, and this is as real as they come.
Oh, yeah, again. This is.
How many times have you been to Vegas?
Again, you're going to make me sound like a degenerate gambler, but I've been more than I can count on one hand.
No, but you go for the buffets.
I do go for the buffets. I'm a degenerate eater, you could say. So, yeah, I've been to, and I've seen this guy in Vegas.
Yeah, and I've
been this
to,
guy in Atlantic
I've been
City.
To Atlantic City more times than I'd like to admit.
That's true, too.
This is a guy that you've seen, that you've heard, just like across the ways.
Absolutely, absolutely. I love it.
Maybe this is why I don't play craps, because more interaction with a guy like this.
I feel like if we were in an area where there was more table gambling, like readily accessible, you didn't have to drive down to Atlantic City. After watching the scene, you'd play craps tonight.
Oh yeah.
Maybe a little bit of alcohol.
I was just about to say,
you.
Next time I go to a casino, I'm gonna totally be like shakalaka doo, shakalaka dooby doo.
It's fun, and I will like Philip Baker Hall, watch you from a side.
Yeah. And just like disgust.
In disgust. That's the best way to put it. Unfortunately, we do have to move on in this film. Not that it's a bad film, but
no, I mean that's the end of PSH. He didn't you know help Sydney out with his Sydney put $2,000 down on this bet.
No,
that was, I don't know if we mentioned that. It's kind of important. He puts
$2,000
down. Yeah,
but I feel like Sydney's a guy. He's a career gambler. Some days he's going to lose $2,000. Some days he's going to win $5,000.
Oh, yeah, and he knows that. That's, like, one of his earlier things, like, he expresses to John. It's just, like, that it's not a guarantee.
No. If he was winning all day, every time, he'd be a billionaire, you know? Mm-hmm. You just got to win most of the time.
And again, last thing about this scene is that I love it because it's... Is it fair to say this is, like, besides the quick little flashback to John and the matchbook catching fire in his pocket, this is, like, the lightest moment of the movie?
Yeah, because it certainly turns dark.
Because right after this, boy, does it turn dark. And
dark
this
fast,
is where
it goes downhill.
Things take a turn for the worse.
Yeah, so what? Sid's passed out in his bed, right? And we find out that John screwed up.
Yeah, John calls and he needs help.
Yes, he needs help. Sid shows up, and one, he's holding a guy hostage.
Mm-hmm.
Two, we find out that John pimps his girlfriend Clementine out.
Not his girlfriend, his newlywed wife.
Oh, yeah, good point.
They decide to elope.
Yeah, they get married.
Oh, but it's okay. They do a beautiful thing of filming it and giving it to Sydney so he has a little memento. Like, they're just a bunch of dysfunctional people.
Oh, yeah.
And not only so they're got this guy tied up, but now they're also going to hold him hostage for money.
Yes, on their wedding night.
Yeah, the guy owes her $300.
And it wasn't like their plan was to hold him hostage and, like, get money. No, it's like on their wedding night, John pimps Clementine out.
Yeah.
And it looks like this guy's not going to pay.
Yeah.
So they go too far. They beat him to a bloody pulp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sydney comes in. He thinks, like, this guy is dead at first. Reasonably so. And this, I mean, again, this is just, like, the dive. I mean, Boogie Nights has, like, its moment of, like, where everyone's at their low. This is just really where, like, everyone's kind of, like, getting to their low. And Clementine, like, doesn't want to leave. She's being really hard. Like, John gets talked over by Sydney. Like, you know, because Sydney, in the end of the day, is kind of, like, almost like a guardian angel to a lot of people. And John starts listening.
Especially John.
Yeah, especially John. And John starts, you know, heeding the words of Sydney, but Clementine is not listening. John ends up hitting her.
Yeah, so
which really feels out of place.
So, yeah, it kind of does. Sid is basically, like, telling him, just, you know, let him go. It's $300. That's your best shot of getting out of this. And, like, hit the road, you know?
You know who he kind of reminded me of? He reminded me of Harvey Keitel's, like, in this scene, Harvey Keitel's character from Pulp Fiction.
That's
like,
fair.
Coming in and just being like, Who'd You Tell? Like, let's get this, like, stuff, like, settled away.
Believe it or not, these are similar films. I know, like, way different in, like, style stuff. But, you know.
I definitely think, like, I mean, supposedly P.T. Anderson wrote this film in, like, 2 weeks or whatever. But I just have a feeling that, like, definitely film like Reservoir Dogs and then definitely Pulp Fiction again came out in 94. So I think it probably had some really strong influence on it.
Now, P.T. Anderson today is a way different filmmaker than Quentin Tarantino.
Yes. I think his overall films are stronger.
At the time.
More masterful.
At the time, though, I think, you know, I don't know if he'll admit it, but he's kind of taken some influence from Pulp Fiction here.
Oh, yeah.
Not in the way the story spreads so much, but at least in this... It's a single arc story, really.
Well, this is just when, like, those crime genres, like, came back into, like, popularity.
Yeah.
In this small, independent film culture. I mean, we had it with... I mean, The Getaway was in this. We talked about it then, too.
True. Again, very different as well. Like,
oh, yeah.
So much less stylized, but...
So I guess, hey, we were just saying before, Phil Seymour Hoffman, we don't even remember a film we covered when we were saying
a film
like this that he's in. Because he was just... I mean... It was
forgettable.
Yeah.
So like you said, Kyle, Clementine won't leave, but he kind of convinces Clementine to leave, but then they find out that they freaking told the wife about this.
Yeah, because they called the wife for money.
There's so many, like, botched jobs here.
Yeah, and then also he got the... John has a gun, and he got it from Jimmy.
You know, like those moments you're like, oh, why are you doing this? You're such an idiot, John C. Reilly.
The one little part of this, like, dark scene that I laughed at is, like, where'd you get the handcuffs? And Clementine just kind of goes, like, they were mine.
Yeah.
Just like this, like, what do you think I had? I'm like, what do you think they're for?
I laughed when they're leaving. Sid convinces Clementine eventually to leave. Like, she listens to his wisdom. Mm-hmm. And I like how she asks, like, I laughed how she asked to feed her cats.
Yeah.
That she just got cats and she needs them fed. This is where, like, he gets the wedding video, too.
Yeah, the lovely, you know, like, gesture of having it filmed or whatever.
So Sid's going to, he says he's going to give them as much money as they need. He's just like, where do you want to go? And they're deciding, like, where their honeymoon should be.
Yeah.
Like, it's hilarious.
Yeah, so I love it. This is a moment again, you know, because it's dark, and then they cut to, they have, like, these light little moments. So this is why I think, like, the beginning of the film is, like, strong. I just wanted to keep having this, like, downhill, like, you know, the moment, this film. But he's just like, you know, go to Niagara Falls. And he's just like, no. And John says, I don't want to go to Niagara Falls. Why not Niagara Falls? He's like, because I've been there before. Like, it's just... Come on.
I know, like, in this, like, just get out of town.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, but John C. Reilly is great at that.
Oh, yeah. He just
like,
has.
Oh, come on, kind of, like.
I don't want a girl.
Yeah.
John and Clem hop in the car, and.
Ted to Niagara Falls.
Yeah, you know, he says to her, do you want to get annulled? And she said no, like, they won't fuck up anymore.
In their own weird way, they have, like, this love story, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the weirdest love story ever, like, pimping out his wife on their wedding night, and just... Something's missing here.
Well, I feel like in this 2.5-hour movie, like, this cut that exists out there somewhere, or was, you know, seen by a bunch of French people at some point, there was more to their characters, but pretty much then they go on the back burner for the rest of this film.
Yeah, which is an interesting choice.
There is this nice moment where Sidney watches the tape, and he's, like, watching his adoptive children have this, like, this beautiful moment. But then he gets a call from Jimmy, and then he goes and he meets Jimmy in his car.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Jimmy arc here is interesting. Well, first of all, we'll go into it, but how do you feel about it? Like, are you...
I mean, I think the character is a great character.
Just like the whole reveal here and, like, what happened.
It's pretty sloppy.
I tend to agree. I wrote the same thing. I'm glad we're on the same page here.
Like, there's really fun stuff. Like, Jimmy asks Sidney not to smoke in his car. And then what does he do right after? He lights up his own cigarette.
I'll say this. I like the dialogue and the back and forth. I'm not so cool with, like, what's happening.
No, but then the overall, again, like, the story we find out. So the big thing we find out is that Jimmy knows about AC. And we're like, what happened in AC? And he put... You shot his father, like, you shot John's father.
What? Yeah, so the plus of this, I guess we understand now why in that opening scene he decided to take John under his wing. for whatever reason, he shot his father, probably like some.
But I'm confused by this timeline because he wants to have a funeral for his mom.
That's what tripped me.
Shouldn't
Did
it
he
be
kill
like...
the entire family?
No, I'm just like...
Well, his mom's in Vegas, so I'm not understanding. I don't follow that. Maybe we don't need to know.
Yeah.
I guess the point is that Sidney just feels like he owes John.
Oh, yeah. No, I get that aspect.
Like that he
of
needs
it,
to be a father
whole
in his life.
Main, like, what ends up being, like, a huge, like, story crux of this film.
Yeah, I mean, it's short, but it's important. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy's now extorting Sid because he says he's going to tell John. And Sid's gotten to the point with John that, again, like you said, he feels like he's a father figure, and he knows that would just destroy their relationship. Yeah. No way, like, is John processing that well and it being okay, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you never know with him the way he lives his life, but it's just not worth the risk. And basically, he doesn't want his secret out.
Yeah, like, because John has become, I don't know why he stopped Sidney stopped talking to his, like, biological children, but John is clearly, like, his son now.
Yeah.
And not only did he end up helping, like, maybe he thought he was just gonna have this one-time, like, help gesture with John, with the whole, like, teach him, like, how to do stuff, but they clearly, you know, that's why it was important to have that cut to 2 years later, because sometimes those moments are weak, but we definitely get right away that they spent a lot of time together during those 2 years.
And he took him under his wing.
Yeah, and he loves him.
Now, I like Sam Jackson's, well, Jimmy's line here when he says, no matter how hard you try, you're not his father. Mm. You know, and that's, that,
yeah.
Like...
No, there's some great, I mean,
like... I, like I said, I like the dialogue.
Yeah.
Premise.
I think it probably comes down to, like, this, I mean, hey, P.T. Anderson, he made this edit, so...
Yeah, and again, for a first time.
Oh, no, I mean, come on. First time film, this is masterful. This is a great film. I'm speaking.
No, we're nitpicking. That's what we're here to do.
Yeah. Sidney gives Jimmy the money, and then Sidney decides to call John and
it's not that much money either. I didn't write the amount down.
$10,000.
$10,000, which again is a lot of money, but I feel like...
Yeah, but he even says, like, I don't even have that. He gives him $6,000 or something like that.
I think it's also a pride thing, too.
Yeah.
You don't want to be extorted by this chump. A guy he clearly doesn't respect.
Yeah. Oh, John actually... I think John calls Sidney. If Sidney tells him that he loves him.
They have a really emotional phone call. And that really, like, hits home, like, how much he cares about him. He tells him... Like you said, he tells him he loves him. And he's... You kind of see where this is going a little bit. Like, that, you know, there's no way he would have let that secret out. And even if you give Jimmy, Sam Jackson's character, the $10,000, you don't know if he's going to really shut his mouth.
And hey, what is Sidney kind of... This is where, like, also I'm like, wow. Like, Sidney, he was, to quote Philip Seymour Hoffman, old-timer. He's got his, he had his rules, and he has, like, his way he lives his life. But then, besides finding out, we don't know why he killed John's father, but... This next scene, boy, we see, like, that he's just, like, very...
So I feel like...
Right to the point.
I like this, but it was interesting because it's one of those cut scenes where you see... So Jimmy's coming home with this girl.
Yeah, we see that Jimmy is, like, now that he's, like, in the money, I guess, yeah. With his $6,000 and he's got his, like, fly suit on.
Yeah.
That, he's coming home with a woman he met when he was playing some craps himself.
We're also kind of seeing scenes of John.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, is he going to kill John? Because there's two ways out of this secret, right?
Yeah.
There's to kill Jimmy or to kill John. You know he's going to kill someone here. It's setting it up that way.
Mm-hmm.
But he kills Jimmy.
Yeah, he breaks in. He's just sitting in the chair, shoots Jimmy, and tells, like, the woman to go, which is pretty badass.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's the right choice that he... In this guy's world where, like, you can do that, he kills Jimmy. He gets his money back, which I like. Because Sam Jackson's just, like, flaunting the money, mm-hmm. just throwing it around, right? Gets his money back, and we kind of end there.
Yeah, and then the last thing is then he goes to the diner.
They do go back to the same diner.
Yeah, and I just love it. It's just like this, she comes up, pours him a coffee or asks him what he wants. He wants a cup of coffee, and then he just notices, like, a little blood on his white shirt and kind of just, like, pulls up his jacket sleeve to cover it up.
Yeah, I really liked that. That was cool. That put a nice bow on the film.
Mm-hmm. So, again, this is really important thing, and that's I wish I could see this original cut that existed, because the guy that was kidnapped, that, you know, wasn't going to pay Clementine.
Oh, the guy money, they, yeah, okay, on the wedding night, yeah.
He ends up coming and shooting Philip Baker Hall and killing him.
And killing him?
Yeah.
Really?
Outside of the diner, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's a whole different film.
Wow, and like, we would talk about so much more, because there's Jimmy, Samuel L. Jackson, and Philip Baker Hall's character, Sidney, they have this little brief discussion in the car, like, mm-hmm. oh, there's no way that guy's coming after. They yeah. kind of call him, like, a coward or something.
No, that's the whole thing. So I think that it was Jimmy's character tells him, so that's kind of like, you think that after Jimmy gets killed, that it's just like, okay, Philip Baker Hall, everyone's, you know.
Yeah, everyone's in the clear, because to be clear, like, this character that's kidnapped kind of just runs away, and the... What they say is that he's too embarrassed, really, to, like, tell his wife or tell other people, so they kind of let it go. If he killed Sidney at the end, that adds a whole new, like, wrinkle. That's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
Now that, like, we discuss it and talk about it, that's interesting. But, I mean, I guess, you know, they made P.T. Anderson cut it, and maybe it wouldn't have worked. Who knows? Of all of Philip Seymour Hoffman movies that we've seen so far, this one feels the most modern, again, of the ones we've seen.
Come on, man. Twister and that CGI?
No, and Twister is blockbuster style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This feels more like an artsy, but mm-hmm. not like the first Amos Poe film artsy.
P.T. Anderson could make this today, and it would be...
Yeah, and maybe because we've given him more... We, like me and you did. No, but like the audiences and studios have given him more leeway, mm-hmm. and he could basically make any film he wants now, and... more people of maybe that generation, like Tarantino, could do anything he wants now and stuff. But back then, movies like Pulp Fiction or Heartache, and I'm trying to think of some others off the top of my head, were not what you would normally see in the theater. I would say 75% to 90% of the films were more like The Getaway or When a Man Loves a Woman, or mm-hmm. they had that kind of, I don't know, quality to them. Even Scent of a Woman, which is an Oscar film, really, yeah. right? Like, still feels like it's, like, an early 90s kind of popcorn-y thing.
I think, honestly, it comes down to, like, the almost, like, the sappiness of the relationships in that movie.
In those
movies.
That's valid.
This has some very simple love of, like, a father and son. Or, you know, like, kind of relationship in this movie. Like, that's, like, it's not like Philip Baker Hall has a romantic relationship.
Maybe this era, and again, we're not, like, we'd never call ourselves film experts here. We're film fans.
Yeah.
Maybe we know more than the average person out there, but we're not like highbrow film professors here. We see something that I think we see in like the 70s with like that dark Scorsese era, like the Palma stuff. Mm-hmm. But then Jaws brings in the blockbusters, and obviously Twister's more of a blockbuster.
Yeah.
This is definitely not a blockbuster. And even though Pulp Fiction makes a lot of money, that's not a blockbuster in that traditional yeah. sense. And I think we're moving more to, at least in this era, this kind of film. I think what you said, like, P.T. Anderson can make this film now, probably would be a little bit different because he has a little bit more leeway. Yeah. But we would get this, like... It feels like a film that could be made now.
Yeah. His last feature film is Inherent Vice. That's like a crime movie.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, God, we keep like...
But it's like... But it's over the top, so you kind of see like now that he has like, you know, like a kid in a candy shop and he can do whatever he wants, like how much bigger... I mean, it comes from... I mean, that's like a crazy book, obviously.
Mm, true, true.
But like There Will Be Blood is kind of like... It's small and intimate, like as far as like not as big of like...
It's big visually, but it's yeah. intimate story-wise. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you're a P.T. Anderson fan. Anything else you want to add with Heartache, or especially with Philip Seymour Hoffman? Anything cool you found out?
Well, right when Philip Seymour Hoffman passed away... Philip Baker Hall was interviewed by Rolling Stone magazine, and he just had some, you know, nice words to say about the young actor. Philip and I had a working relationship with the P.T. Anderson movies, and my regard for him both as an artist and a man couldn't be higher. He was a great artist and an amazing actor. As a man, I found his generosity and purity of spirit was absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, those are nice words. I mean, look, Philip Baker Hall, like, I mean, he's not even a known name now. Mm-hmm. But when you see his face, you know him.
Yeah.
back then, he certainly, I don't think he was a known name either, but he's still a great get for P.T. Anderson here.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about it in the interview, because you're right, I did read this one as well. He talked about how much he admired a kid who just walked onto set and just improvised, and he could tell, he knew what he was doing, and he had the courage about this, and he had the...
Yeah, he was really, in a good way, taken back by both P.T. Anderson and Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, essentially two kids.
Yeah, that, and P.T. Anderson was even younger than Philip Seymour Hoffman. I think P.T. Anderson was, 23 when he made this movie.
Crazy.
I know, which just makes me, jealous.
Yeah. How unaccomplished does that make you feel?
Whatever.
Well, we got a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. But, he was just really impressed by both these guys, but especially by Philip Seymour Hoffman sharing that scene with him. And I don't think they don't share words together in Boogie Nights.
No,
but
I'm sure they're on the same set, though.
Yeah. There.
But, in this, he's good. Philip Bickerhall says in this interview, if I remember correctly, how... He was impressed that he just went toe-to-toe with him like a veteran actor, and he wasn't intimidated. Mm-hmm. And maybe he wasn't even shy, but he certainly didn't show it.
Yeah, it's just... I love this scene, and people... we'll definitely... we have it posted on our Facebook page, so check it out.
Yeah, watch this scene, check it out. Let us know what you think. We have a treat, because we have back-to-back P.T. Anderson films.
Mm-hmm.
Next week we have
Boogie Nights,
one of your favorites,
favorite films of all time.
And
I'm so excited.
From talking to all you guys and talking to our guests, it's definitely a film a lot of people recognize him from, a lot of favorite films, and we're super excited to be discussing that one.
Yeah, it's just definitely it's one of the better made films of all time. It's definitely, it's on lists from AFI, IMDb, just critics all around, Boogie Nights, and it is the role that Philip Seymour Hoffman just became really recognized by critics, audiences, directors, other actors.
Yeah, definitely really looking forward to talk about Boogie Nights and soundtrack, just visuals.
Yeah, definitely tune in next week, people.
Cast. Oh, yes. All right, so that's this week's podcast. Like, share, subscribe.
Thanks, guys, and we'll see you at the craps table.
Where did you come from, baby? How did you know I needed you? How did you know I needed you so badly? How did you know I'd give my heart? Sex a thing, you.